Welcome to Talk Dizzy to Me, the show that brings you a comprehensive look into the complex field of dizziness. Now here are your hosts, vestibular physical therapist Dr. Abby Ross and Dr. Danielle Tolman.
Welcome back, everyone, to Talk Dizzy to Me. I'm Dr. Abby Ross. I'm a vestibular therapist, joined as always by Dr. Danielle Tolman, also a vestibular physical therapist. And today, we have another patient-led episode for all our patient listeners out there. She is a great example, an inspirational example on where she started versus where she is now. And she has some great tips to share with you to encourage you on your own vestibular journey. I actually had the pleasure of working with Allison Hershey, our guest today. So thank you so much for joining us, Allison. Give our audience a little introduction on yourself. What happened? How was life pre-symptoms? How did you develop symptoms? Let's start there.
Yes. No, thank you so much. And I just want to thank you both for allowing me space to come on your podcast and share my story. You will learn that it's been quite a journey for me. And, you know, I just wanted to thank you both for everything that you do, because listening to Talk Dizzy to Me was actually one of the first resources that I came across that really provided a lot of education in the vestibular space, which I knew nothing about before, you know, my symptoms started. So I just want to thank you both for, you know, everything that you do to help educate the vestibular community. So thank you so much for that. So I'll talk a little bit about myself. So my name's Allison. I live in Florida with my amazing husband and our fur baby, Bentley. So I'm a proud fur baby mom. So I have been working in human resources. Actually, that's kind of my background, my career. So my husband and I actually have a business that we work on together, and I handle the human resources side of the business. You know, one thing, like a few things about me is we love to travel. I love to cook. I love to do makeup. Like, makeup's a huge kind of like hobby and passion of mine, trying, you know, new looks with makeup. I have great friends and family. So yeah, that's just a little bit, you know, about myself. One thing that I kind of wanted to talk about when my journey started was kind of talk about, you know, where I was at right before my vestibular symptoms started and what kind of set them off. So, you know, I just wanted to mention, because I have listened to a lot of people's stories and they tend to touch on, you know, maybe big life events or stressors happened when their, you know, vestibular symptoms started. And while, you know, that can definitely be the case for so many, I just wanted to point out that that doesn't necessarily have to be the case for everyone. My symptoms started the event started June 1st of last year of 2023. And, you know, prior to that, we had actually just returned from a trip abroad 2 weeks prior to that. So I, you know, I was at a place in my life, I had just turned 35 as well. So I was kind of at a place in my life where I was trying to figure out my next move. You know, a lot of my friends had started having kids or were, you know, exploring that path and trying. And I just felt like I wasn't at a place to be doing that yet, or it wasn't something that I wanted to start exploring yet. I felt like I was kind of at a place in my career where I had kind of always defined myself by my career. That's kind of what I had been taught growing up early on in my career. And so I just was not finding the same fulfillment that I probably once did earlier on in my career. So that was kind of weighing on me as well. And I was honestly, if you look at me and where I was at then, from an emotional standpoint, a mental standpoint, I was just very lost. I was just in a very lost place. So I just wanted to point that out to listeners that, you know, if you think back and you're like, well, no big life event necessarily took place before, that's okay. But maybe just kind of reflect on, you know, where you were at mentally, emotionally, and kind of what was going on in that, you know, realm of things right before the symptoms came on. I think that's important. So I just wanted to point that out. So I'll kind of talk about like my journey and what that looked like. So like I said, on June 1st of 2023, I'll never forget the date. I hear that from most people. They never forget the date. I had a vertigo attack, a spinning vertigo attack in the middle of the night. So I'll never forget. I was actually leaning over to turn the light off on my nightstand next to my bed. And I almost, you know, when you move really quick and you kind of get that dizziness sensation, that happened. And I thought, oh, I moved maybe too quick. And I didn't think anything of it. I went to bed and I got up in the middle of the night and the room was spinning. I mean, it was terrifying. I've never actually had a vertigo attack before that. Luckily, never again since then, a spinning vertigo attack, should I say. But it was pretty terrifying. And, you know, it probably lasted for 30 seconds to a minute, but it feels like an eternity when the whole room is spinning. And so I came out of it. But I would say I probably went into just like almost a panic attack at that point, even though, you know, the physical room had stopped spinning. I remember I went downstairs and it was like the middle of the night. So my husband had no idea. I went downstairs and I was pacing. I was pacing around the room to see if it went away, to see if I would keep spinning. And I remember for hours I was doing that. It was a pretty scary feeling. I finally did go back to bed because I felt a little off. But it didn't happen again. So I said, okay, I don't know what happened, but it's okay. Go back to bed, calm down. And so I did. And then the next day I kind of did still feel off, kind of almost like a hangover feeling. And I remember I would move in certain areas. Like I would get up off the, at one point I was like laying down and I would get up and I did feel a little bit of like that spinniness, dizziness sensation, not in the same way. But I just felt off, but I said, okay, let me give this a couple of days. Maybe that's normal. And it went away. All the off feeling went away. And then about a week later, it kind of came back, that feeling. And I just felt really off again. And I'll kind of get into what the symptoms were when I, you know, get to that point. But yeah, I just had that off feeling again. And I said, this isn't normal. So I didn't even know where to start. I started with an ENT cause I read, you know, online, that would be a good place to start. And I went to the ENT and he did is it Dix-Hallpike testing for BPPV?
Yep.
Yes. So he did that and he said it basically came back inconclusive, but I do remember feeling like when he would move me certain ways, I would feel dizziness. So I don't really know how it was inconclusive, but he did the Epley maneuver cause he said this could be BPPV or it could have been a BPPV episode, or from the get-go, he mentioned vestibular migraine. Which I know not everyone's as lucky to hear the word vestibular and understand that what you're dealing with is in that realm of things from the get-go. But it was also kind of scary because you're told, oh, it could be vestibular migraine or something related to migraine. And I wasn't given really many answers. It was just like, go home and see how you feel. Well, he also did say, I'm going to recommend you go to a balance center and get further testing done. So he did recommend that, but there really wasn't much of a takeaway from it. And so the symptoms actually did continue to improve again. So by the time I got into the balance center for all the balance testing, the symptoms had gone away again. So all the testing came back normal when I went in for the balance testing. They did the rotary chair, which that's always fun, getting spun in a chair. They did the VNG, I believe is what it's called, with the goggles. Yeah. They did not do a caloric test, which is basically, I think, where they put water in the ears, correct? And it creates vertigo. So they didn't do that. They did do things with the ears. I also had an audiologist look at me and get testing there. And it all came back good. So the doctor at the Balance Center said the same thing. She said this could have been a BPPV episode, or you might have vestibular migraine. She said, here's a list of foods to maybe try avoiding if the symptoms come back. And that was it. That was all I got. I mean, she did say, if the symptoms come back, go see a neurologist and explore, you know, that avenue. And so they were gone for about 2 more weeks. They were gone. And then they came back. Oh, and did they came back full force. And I have all my symptoms listed here because I feel like there were just so many and it's easy to miss. So I mean, really the biggest one was the dizziness, kind of that, that imbalance, that disequilibrium, almost like a sensation of moving or floating. It's so hard to explain for someone that has never felt that, but like, it almost felt like I was bouncing up and down. I would have gravitational pulls pulling me one way or the other. That was pretty bad in the beginning. I had a lot of visual symptoms as well, which I had 20/20 vision before this. I've never worn corrective lenses or anything like that. So I had like blurry vision. I had trouble reading actually as well at first. I remember my husband loves watching things with subtitles, and it was almost like my brain couldn't comprehend and put words together. That's almost what it seemed like. I never really had problems watching the TV and like watching visual things on the TV, but I couldn't do the subtitles and I couldn't read for a while. So I had a lot of visual symptoms, a lot of like visual vertigo, I think is what the term would be, where I would just get really overstimulated. I would go into a grocery store and it was just like, it was too much between the bright lights and all of the, you don't realize like how stimulating a grocery store is until your senses start to not like work together. So, you know, busy streets, things of that nature were really overstimulating for me. Weird things would happen. Like I would feel like almost a non-spinning vertigo, I guess, where it felt like the floor would be moving underneath me or like my feet would be moving when they weren't. Like I'd be standing still and it felt like I was moving. It was the craziest thing. So, you know, that was a big thing. I had a lot of sensitivity to light in the beginning as well. Never sound sensitivity, never anything really with the ears, never had tinnitus or anything of that nature, but a lot of light sensitivity in the beginning. I had a ton of head pressure as well. So it's almost like a band of pressure was around my head. And I even had, I feel like my head was actually, there was something going on with it because I'd put my sunglasses on and they would be tight after wearing them for like 30 minutes. So there was definitely something going on with my head in the beginning, a lot of head pressure, never like a headache per se. I had a lot of intense brain fog. I swear some days I couldn't even remember what the next sentence was that I was about to say. So a lot of intense brain fog. And I think one of the scariest things was the derealization, which is kind of that concept that your body isn't existing in reality. It's almost like you're looking through life through like a veil or a lens or you know, a cloudy window or something like that. So that didn't happen every day, but it happened quite often. And until I started researching, I was just like, oh my gosh, what is this sensation that I'm feeling? So yeah. So as you can see, I had a ton of symptoms in the beginning. And, you know, once they kind of came on that third time, they never really, well, I don't want to say they never let up. They eventually did, but they didn't let up kind of after a few days or a couple weeks. So they were 24/7. Some days would definitely be incredibly extreme. Some days not as extreme. They would change a lot, the symptoms. Some days they'd look different than the next, but they were always kind of there in the background. So yeah, I mean, it was an incredibly scary situation, having never dealt with any of those types of symptoms before, and then to be experiencing 24/7. So yeah.
I'm going to stop you there because yeah. You've touched on so much so far. And one of the things that I'm sure we'll get into that I love about your case is that you touch on the mind-body connection. You touched on that from the beginning. And I thank you for being so vulnerable because that's such a common thing that people experience. But also with all these different symptoms, your successful treatment path included what we call a treatment pie, where you have different mm-hmm. aspects of care that all combined really helped get you to where you are now. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. take us on the journey a little bit in terms of your treatment. Like you said, you were very fortunate to have the term vestibular put in your face on your mm-hmm. very first visit. That is pretty much unheard of in our
world. I know. It is, but it was difficult in the beginning because yes, the term vestibular was brought up, but there, oh my gosh, it's just like not fully understood in the medical system by a lot of even specialists I was seeing. And that's at no fault of their own. They had no ill intentions, but I wasn't getting a lot of answers. And so I'll kind of go through too. I'll just briefly explain everyone that I saw. So in the course of 2 months, I saw 7 specialists. So I saw 2 ENTs. I saw that balance specialist, the doctor that worked there. I saw an audiologist. I saw a neurologist. I saw a neuro-ophthalmologist, and I saw a neurotologist, which they, you know, are neurologists of the inner ear, and probably are the best bet to go, honestly, when you're dealing with something like this. But I saw a lot of doctors, and I think that goes to show you, I just wasn't getting tangible takeaways of a treatment plan to start pursuing. And I'll definitely get into that. But I think the first place to definitely start with any of this is to get, you know, tests done, MRIs done, scans done to rule out anything bigger. Early on, I did have a doctor tell me, who actually wasn't a specialist that I was seeing for any of these issues. It was an oral surgeon. So I was seeing him for my mouth. And I was just telling him about some of the symptoms because they had kind of started at that point. And he said, "It sounds like you have MS." He said that to me. So I walked around for 2 weeks thinking that I had MS or it had to be a brain tumor or something large, right? That were causing symptoms this jarring. So from the get-go, my nervous system was just like completely out of whack. I don't even know how I got through, you know, those early weeks, honestly. But, you know, once I got all the testing done and I could rule out anything big, of course I felt great that my testing came back. My neurologist said, "This is the healthiest 35-year-old brain I've ever seen." So of course you feel good knowing, okay, maybe it's not a bigger issue, but then you're like, what is this?
It's frustrating. So I will say, you bring up a lot of great points in terms of the testing aspect of things, right? A lot of times people get very frustrated that when they go for testing, everything keeps coming back negative. And All of a sudden you reach this point when you're surprised with yourself of like wishing they would just find something terrible, which I think is hard. I love your outlook on things where you are saying we're checking off all the things and it's not, we're ruling out all the big things. Whereas a lot of people do get very down on getting back negative testing because they feel like it's a reflection on them that they're faking it or that maybe it's all in their head. And I love your aspect and your approach where you say, nope, we're checking off all the boxes. We're ruling out all the big bad things. And I feel better knowing that we don't have to worry about them and we're getting closer to the problem and closer to the cause of all these. So I love that outlook. I think that it's an outlook that everybody should try to embody because I think that helps in the early stages of that vestibular testing and vestibular journey, especially since for people with things like triple PD or vestibular migraine or BPV, all the testing will come back negative typically, and especially if you're in between episodes. So it can be very, very difficult to pin down and sometimes get all that testing to kind of point in that direction.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that that's where everyone should start if I had to make a recommendation, for navigating the healthcare system with this is start with the biggest things and rule them out. And kind of work from there. One thing I will say is I never really was able to get a set in stone diagnosis from any of the doctors that I was meeting with or specialists that I was meeting with. And I started working with Dr. Ross, and I'll definitely get, you know, to that part of my journey in my treatment plan. And she was actually the first person that mentioned 3PD. And it's funny because around the same time I had actually been listening to your podcast and I heard an episode on 3PD and I said, oh my gosh, that I checked every box for that. I met every criteria for that. And then when Dr. Ross mentioned that I met every criteria for it, it kind of gave me something to work towards in developing a treatment plan moving forward. That was nice. I think my personality type, I like to know, I like things to be black and white. And there's so much of a gray area when you're working with something like this, that you have to accept that and you have to just move forward through that. And I think, you know, really no matter what the condition, or many of these conditions, should I say, they have very similar symptoms. So you can go about developing a very similar treatment plan for them. So, you know, I started seeing the same things over and over again and how to treat these conditions, 3PD being the main one that I focused on. And so I just kind of ran with that and I started with that. And so VRT was the first thing that came up. I knew this was something that I had to pursue. I knew it was an absolute must in my healing journey. And so I was listening to the Talk Dizzy to Me podcast, and I reached out to you both and I said, I have to work with you, please. I just feel like you're so educated in this space. And I'm not seeing a lot of that in my journey. And I just felt that I could get immense help from you. And so I did start working with Dr. Ross virtually. At the same time, I had like a two-pronged approach to VRT. So I was also had started working with someone here in person in Florida to kind of get that going. I am kind of an old soul in that way, and I like that in-person touch, but I knew that working with Dr. Ross was so important as well. So I took like that approach of working with both of you and keeping both updated with, you know, what I was doing with the other. And so VRT is something that takes a lot of time. It takes, you know, ensuring that you're doing the exercises. It takes showing up. And, you know, I was doing VRT for the first 3 months of my journey twice a week. So I was going biweekly, or I was going twice a week, every week, and then doing my exercises at home twice a day on top of that. And so I did that for the first 3 months. And honestly, I started seeing improvement. That's the first time I started seeing improvement in the symptoms. I mean, it was little things that I would start to see improvement on. Like one of the first symptoms to really improve for me was the visual stuff. And I'm happy to say that's completely cleared up for me. And I saw a huge improvement in that from VRT. In fact, I think VRT is what made that clear up so quickly. But it takes commitment to doing, you know, to showing up and doing the exercises. So after 3 months, I kind of moved back on working once a week and doing exercises at home every single day, still once a day. And I think at that point it had been about 5 months, and Dr. Ross and I, we always were keeping in touch, and I was keeping her updated. And I was pretty much at the hardest level, I think, of exercises that I could be doing at that point. And so I'll never forget you saying that the best exercise at this point where you're at is to get out there and live life, because I was living life. I was very lucky in that and grateful in that I was never bedbound from the beginning. I mean, it was tough, right? Like it was tough, especially because you don't even know what's happening to you. But there was something in me that knew I had to keep going. I had to, and yes, allow myself to rest, allow recovery, and allow, you know, time at home, downtime. But I was still getting out there and doing little things, like walking outside from the beginning. I would still try and do as much social interaction as I could because I'm such a social being. So I was always doing that. And I think that helped too, that I got moving from the beginning and that VRT helped me really get moving. So after about 5 months of VRT, I really stepped back on that and I just started living life. So I was going to grocery stores like every day, and I would just sometimes I would do full days of shopping, right? Or I would just walk in there and spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes walking through the aisles. I'm pretty sure, you know, my local grocery store is like, who's this crazy girl that's always showing up every day and never buys anything? So, you know, I was doing that. I was walking a lot outside. I started walking in very busy, not in the street, but like with a lot going on the sidewalks versus before I was doing it maybe more in the neighborhood or where, you know, it wasn't as busy. So I continue to take what I learned in VRT and implement it in my real life activities, if that makes sense. And so that was the first step for me in my recovery. And honestly, probably one of the biggest steps was VRT.
Yeah, I'm so glad of multiple points that you brought up. But one thing I want to say is that for our listeners, you can have multiple diagnoses at play at one time, and something like 3PD can stem from another vestibular event. So whether you fit all the boxes for a vestibular migraine or you don't, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't also have or develop 3PD. Whether you fit all the boxes for BPPV, and then eventually develop 3PD, you know, those things can coexist. The other thing that I wanted to mention was, you're a rare breed, okay, when it comes to compliance, because life is busy and doing exercises that can trigger symptoms is not always the ideal thing that you want to be doing with your day. But the fact that you were so committed to the repetition of exercises speaks to the progress that you showed. And also, I'm sure you'll touch on this term in a little bit maybe, but just the ability of the brain to adapt and adjust to the things that you are inputting. The last thing I want to say before you continue on is that dosage of exercise is very important. So when you started a program in both therapy realms, you know, you start and then you build upon it. You start and you repeat that exercise program until you get better and better. And then you build upon it. You make it more challenging. You go for a longer duration. You add more head movement, whatever the progression looks like. But it doesn't mean that the path is necessarily linear, meaning your exercise course or your therapy recommendations might not be always better, 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 better. You might have a time in your journey where you have to take a step back and maybe revert back to some older exercises and then continue on. But I love the fact that you were so committed to the exercises. And I think that speaks to some of your personality traits that you mentioned, but in that, it helped you.
It's a gift and a curse all in one to have that type of personality trait. I will remember too, at one point, I was showing Dr. Ross the way I was doing exercises, and she was like, you're being very extreme with your hand movements. And I said, that's just me. Like, I'm such an extreme person. Right. And I had to learn though, like I said, it can be a blessing and a curse to have that personality type, but to kind of pull back sometimes and find that balance, right? Ironically, that balance in giving it your all, but also, you know, having kindness and compassion towards yourself and maybe not being so extreme and maybe being flexible in your approach as well, because I'm not the best at flexibility. It's something that I continue to learn and develop, but this taught me that I had to be so flexible in so many aspects when you're going through something like this. So and you know, I'll kind of talk to you about the setbacks, at one point and not really letting those break you. But even in my experience, you know, there were exercises that we would do that were great, right, for that day. And then the next day I was like, oh man, I really provoked something today. And does that mean, you know, at first I was like, oh, what does that mean? Am I working my way backwards? And it's like, no, actually when you are provoking symptoms, it's actually a good thing. And I know it seems scary in the moment and when it's happening, but that's kind of the point of VRT, is to provoke those symptoms and kind of tone down that, you know, that anxious, nervous brain that has so much going on in it, and kind of teach it that this doesn't have to be so scary. And, you know, the more symptoms are provoked, you have to remind yourself it's not forever. It really should only be for, you know, that moment. And then you kind of get back to baseline. So I just want to tell listeners that that is something to expect in VRT, and it's a part of the healing process for sure. But don't let that scare you or deter you from exploring that route, if that makes sense. So okay. So I kind of wanted to go, into something we, you know, touched on, and that is the mind-body connection that I started to see happening here. And the role that the nervous system plays in this anxious dizziness cycle. I just want to point out that, you know, these symptoms are so jarring. Like, they really are so jarring, and it is a completely normal thing for someone to develop extreme amounts of stress and anxiety over these symptoms. I'd actually be concerned if you weren't stressed out over feeling these types of symptoms, especially if they're 24/7 or chronic. So I actually was listening to someone speak on this one time, and she had said that she had experienced in her life chronic pain before, chronic fatigue syndrome, but then when chronic dizziness hit her, nothing stopped her in her tracks the way that did. It was that extreme an experience to go through. So I started to understand that after that vertigo attack that I had, my nervous system had probably become extremely dysregulated, and everything leading up to it, you know, being scared that something bigger was going on, just the extremeness of the symptoms and them kind of creeping up on you and then never going away. There were so many things that dysregulated my nervous system. And so I kind of started researching on this concept of neural circuit dizziness. And I have my notes in front of me just to kind of go off of, because I don't want to explain it the wrong way. It is backed in a lot of science. So basically, our nervous system works off of something called neural pathways. And so you can kind of think of neural pathways as a pattern that represents any thought or behavior that you've ever had. And it's pretty remarkable, because a person can develop new neural pathways from basically birth till death. Like your whole life, you're redeveloping neural pathways. And so when something like an event happens, and it can be an event that causes pain or dizziness or whatever, those neural pathways, it kind of starts in the brain, right? And then sends the sensations to the body. So like, for example, when you touch a hot stove, that sensation of pain actually starts in the brain and gets sent to the body. So you kind of have to think of it in the same way with dizziness. So experiencing, for me at least, something like a vertigo attack, you know, that it provoked that sensation of dizziness. And for many people, or most people, should I say, because I don't want to scare anyone, that if you have a vertigo attack, you're going to end up like this. You know, it goes away. The sensations, it warns you there's a danger that's happened. And then, you know, with time, once your body recovers, I mean, it could even be something structural beyond just a vertigo attack. I mean, it could be a concussion. You know, it could be something that's happened to the inner ear. Typically the brain compensates, right, for what's happened. But for me specifically, and I feel like with 3PD in general, what happens is your brain gets stuck in this this dizziness cycle. And so it continues to send these sensations of dizziness from the brain to the body after the event or whatever it has provoked it has cleared up or healed or whatever you want to say. So that's kind of this concept of neural circuit dizziness. And so, and I just want to express that in no way is this concept saying that it's in your head, right? Because I've heard so many people say, oh yeah, a doctor told me it's just in my head. It's anxiety. I heard, you know, that dizzy girl say that her doctor had told her smile more, which was just wild to me. And I'm so sorry that, you know, anyone experiences that when navigating through the medical system and working with someone that you are trusting to give you answers. And in no way is this concept saying that. It's actually quite the opposite. It's basically saying that, you know, an event has happened and your brain has interpreted those dizziness signals and is actually sending signals to the body on a constant basis. And you're feeling those sensations from those signals. So the sensations are absolutely real. And I just want to point that out. So once I kind of started understanding the role of neural pathways and what neural circuit dizziness is, I was like, okay, well, what do I do with that? How do I break that dizziness cycle, right? And so I learned about neuroplasticity. And you know, if someone is looking to learn more about neural circuit dizziness and neuroplasticity, the Steady Coach is just a great resource. She actually has a free course out there, which is phenomenal that she offers it to people for free. And so, because when you're navigating the medical system, it can be quite costly, right? And the costs add up, and to get something offered to you for free is great. So I learned a lot about neuroplasticity. And so basically neuroplasticity, it's like the brain is plastic. And by the way, feel free to stop me at any point. If you're on
a roll, keep it going.
Okay.
We'll unpack it a little bit more.
So basically neuroplasticity is the concept that, the brain is plastic and the brain is capable to continue growing and evolving and developing new ways of thinking and new behaviors. And so basically it's a way to kind of break those new neural pathways that have been developed, because when you think about it, if they were developed in the first place, you can undevelop them or you can get them to turn the other way, right? And so that's kind of the concept of neuroplasticity. And to really understand it, I had to understand why me, right? Like why did this happen to me? And not that it should happen to anyone. That's definitely not what I'm saying. But I kind of understood that certain characteristics of people, and I hate to say characteristics, but coping strategies that maybe one develops through their life, and you know, history a lot of the time as well, maybe like childhood trauma or trauma as an adult, those can all make someone maybe a little bit more susceptible to developing something like chronic dizziness. You could even say the same for maybe chronic pain as well. And so some of these types of personalities are going to be like your type A personalities, perfectionist, which as you can see, like I definitely am already checking all the boxes. People that tend to be caregivers, people that are people pleasers, have trouble saying no. Yeah, what else? I would say too, like I said, people that have experienced basically difficult childhood experiences or childhood trauma specifically, which I definitely, you know, did have some as well. So I was like, okay, I'm checking every box on this. So this kind of makes sense maybe why the neural circuit dizziness had started happening. And so I was like, okay, well, I need to learn more about neuroplasticity and techniques to kind of help start that process and kind of bring those messages of safety. And I'll just kind of touch on a few for listeners. So parasympathetic breathing, something so simple as breathing, right? But it's a very specific type of breathing that engages the parasympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system is probably what I was in, right? That fight or flight, constantly sending messages of danger, fight or flight. So you're engaging the parasympathetic nervous system with this type of breathing. Another big one is something called somatic tracking. And basically it just teaches your brain to reinterpret signals like dizziness or something like that through a lens of safety and basically start to tone down the way the body is interpreting those signals. So kind of like it's basically sitting with your symptoms, which is scary, right? But confronting them, but in a very neutral way, if that makes sense. And so meditation was another huge one, words of safety, which I've heard, you know, people as well on your podcast talk about. So just reminding yourself, I'm safe, I'm healthy. I'm confident. I'm having kindness towards myself. So just continuously reinforcing those words of safety so that the brain starts to believe it. And then journaling can be like another big one for people as well. I used that earlier on. For myself, it really kind of helped work through some of those childhood experiences and trauma. And so those were just some of the techniques that I learned and I think were just an instrumental part of this piece of my treatment plan of neuroplasticity for me. Yeah, and so that was really a huge part as well. And I'll kind of segue then with that into mental health counseling. That was huge for me, at least in my journey. It was huge. I work with a very specific counselor who is trained in a type of therapy called PRT. It's stands for pain reprocessing therapy. And I love the center that I work with. And my counselor, I can't say enough great things about her. She's just like a phenomenal person in general. But one thing that I really liked about her and most of the counselors that work at this center, they have themselves experienced. They're not only trained, right, in these types of things, but they have themselves experienced things like chronic pain, chronic dizziness. The director of the center actually went through chronic dizziness for a while. So knowing that you're not alone and that your counselor can speak to it and can relate to it and has really that level of sympathy because they themselves have experienced that. So working with her was a game changer. It I think all around for me has improved life immensely beyond the symptoms. So many things that I've learned in therapy that really are tied to neuroplasticity, but you know, having compassion and kindness towards yourself, learning techniques for really developing positive thoughts. I will say before I'm kind of that person to naturally go to the negative. And so I've really had to learn, right? Like to retrain my brain and think positively. It seems like something so easy, but it just didn't come naturally to me, at least. Really being able to name emotions and kind of like find space to sit with those feelings and those emotions and process them. And that was something that I hadn't done with some of the childhood trauma that I had experienced. So it really allowed me to start to dig deeper and build traits that are just something that I had been wanting to do for so long with life before this even happened. So for me personally, therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy is another type of therapy that can be very helpful that I've read for individuals suffering with, you know, chronic dizziness. So yeah, I would say VRT and neuroplasticity and those techniques and then mental health counseling were huge game changers for me. And, you know, I'll kind of just touch on a couple other things with supplements that helped me that I started pretty early on in my journey. So I decided because I could get out of the house, even though it was difficult, I decided I really wanted to stick to the supplement route or at least start in that route before I go towards medications. And so I did a lot of research and I would say the biggest supplement that made the biggest difference was magnesium, specifically glycinate and threonate. It's like a CogniMag that I take. And then riboflavin B2 was something else that I was recommended. Vitamin D. And then I do take these drops. They're like white chestnut drops. They were recommended to me by my acupuncturist. And they are kind of like a natural remedy to help with anxiety and stress. And so I noticed a huge difference. I still continue to take all of those supplements. I probably will never stop taking any of them. Much the magnesium is just like a huge game changer for me. I would say that actually is probably one of the first things that helped clear up the brain fog because I had really severe brain fog in the beginning. So those were huge. And kind of the last thing for me was looking at some alternative medicine. So I had actually been doing acupuncture for years before this happened for other health conditions and areas that I wanted to improve my health in. And I have an incredibly trusted acupuncturist. I trust him with my life. And he was just so great and supportive in this whole process. And you know, something that I really liked about the acupuncture work that I do, yes, we did points for dizziness and to promote equilibrium and things of that nature, but I noticed that sleep was really affecting me. Still kind of affects me when I don't have a good night's sleep, but he would do points for sleep and then immunity as well, because I was so scared of getting sick because I was worried that, you know, I might take steps ahead and then get sick and fall back. And it's funny because I just had the flu a few weeks ago. So that was my first big sickness since this all happened. And I can tell you that I came out okay. And I had, you know, a little setback for a day or two and I'm back to where exactly I was before. But he was doing points for immune purposes. So I would say that was really helpful. And one last thing that I wanted to touch on was massage therapy. And specifically, I did neuromuscular and cranial sacral. That's what was recommended to me. It's a very specific type of massage therapy, and it really promotes a decrease in cortisol levels, which are stress levels. It promotes like harmonious nervous system working together. It's like trigger points basically to release stress and just promote harmony within the body and energetically as well. And my guy that I work with is just so amazing too. I can't speak enough to him. I would say we took like an hour, the first session of meeting. And one thing that he did is he asked a lot about who I was before the symptoms happened. And, I think that was important for me. And that was a huge piece of my healing journey, was putting together a tribe of professionals. And it was a tribe, and I still work with the majority of these professionals. It's less about the symptoms and maybe more about relaxation and things of that nature. But that was so important for me because I had an experience in the beginning of not getting a lot of answers. And so, you know, that is a huge recommendation that I would give to listeners. Navigating the healthcare system can be so frustrating as a vestibular patient and experiencing vestibular symptoms. And you have to know that you know yourself better than anyone, even the doctors. And it's a two-way street when you're working with a healthcare professional. And if any point you feel like your questions aren't being answered or your concerns aren't being addressed or your needs aren't being met, or you feel, you know, uncomfortable or not respected, then it's okay to say, this isn't a good relationship. I'm going to move on, you know, and try something else, work with someone else. I mean, there's so many resources out there. I know that Vita has a great just portal of healthcare professionals across the country that you can go searching for there. And then also the Dizzy Cook is someone that I love her and her, I follow her on social media, and she gives just such like great takeaways. I mean, a lot of information about the Heal Your Headache diet and the migraine elimination diet. Obviously that's like her realm of things, but she, I know she has a whole, like section about, or she's put something out there about across the country, some of the best healthcare professionals to visit in the vestibular space. And I'm just kind of throwing some ideas out there because I know when I started, I was like, where do I even start looking for this? And I'm in a pretty large city, not the largest, but I'm in a pretty large city. So I can only imagine people that, you know, maybe in smaller cities where, they don't have as much access. So I'd say those are two places to really start to look for good healthcare professionals that you can work with and build your tribe with and start developing a treatment plan that works for you. So
I have to say, I think you might have a new career in vestibular coaching and guiding patients like you through the process, because you have so much information and you've had the fortunate experience of being able to really delve into all these different approaches from acupuncture to mental health services to vestibular therapy services. The list is ongoing. And I wanted to mention two things. One is that there's this gentleman that I listen to. His name is Alex Hormozzi. I don't know if either one of you have heard of him, but he talks about how so often we as human beings wait until everything crashes and burns until we do the necessary steps to take care of ourselves, like getting a therapist to help us change our negative thought patterns to positive ones. And I just wonder in this field, how many situations would either be possibly prevented or not turn into such chronic patterns if we as humans did the upfront work, if we as humans took care of ourselves in the beginning, got the sleep, did the relaxation strategies, saw a therapist, et cetera. So that was one thing that I was thinking of. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is you've mentioned a lot of great disciplines. Do you want to shout out any of those providers by name as to who helped you?
I had mentioned the SETI coach. If you want to take the course and learn about neuroplasticity, another person that I want to give a shout out to, I did already, the Dizzy Cook. Her name is Megan, and she has a social media by the name of Conscious Healing. And she actually had worked with the SETI coach at one point. And basically her story was she had had 3PD type symptoms or MDDS type symptoms for about 4 years. And she, I mean, hers were extreme. And she worked through it to recovery using like these neuroplasticity techniques. And she's someone that puts just so much positive information and hopeful information out there. And she herself actually has a course that, yeah, cause she's kind of branched off now and created, her own course. I haven't taken it. I've seen it. It's incredibly in depth, and I can imagine incredibly helpful because it's based on her own experience living through it. So she's another person that I want to shout out. And just, would it be okay if I shout out the specific center for, the counselor that I work with? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's called the Better Mind Center. And like I said, they are trained in PRT and as well as most of them cognitive behavioral therapy as well. And they're trained in many aspects, but PRT specifically is what we use for the chronic dizziness. I can't say enough good things about them. I mean, she has changed my life, honestly, my therapist. And just like you said, I kind of wish that I had started this way before going through all of this, because I think that we don't make enough time for ourselves. It's hard to, right? And in this day and age, and make it okay to relax and to take care of yourself and to have self-care and to meditate and, you know, to be compassionate and kind towards yourself. And gosh, she's made it such a safe place for me to do that working with her. And so I honestly couldn't say enough about her. I have a therapist, physical therapist as well. Like I said, I kind of took that dual pronged approach. Her name is Kim. If you're in the Tampa Bay area, she's incredible. Very highly trained. And I think she kind of brought as well that like mental aspect for me, because I actually just graduated with her last week. So on Valentine's Day, I graduated. Yeah. It was a bittersweet, parting for sure. I think I held on. I had been doing the top of the I was doing circus level exercises at this point. Like not even my husband could do them, right? He was telling me. And so I kind of held on to that though, because you do have times where even in your recovery where setbacks might happen or things might still be provoking. And I remember I would go to her and I would say, I'm like sitting in my car watching TikTok and I feel like I'm moving sometimes. And she said, that'll get better with time. You know, she would just continue to reinforce that. And she would tell me, keep watching TikToks in your car, like keep doing the thing that is provoking the dizziness. And I can happily say that actually has gone away. That sensation on occasion, it may come up. It was there 24/7. So in that mental aspect, you know, she was really helping me. Dr. Ross and I obviously continued working together, doing check-ins with each other. So I really appreciated, you know, that aspect. So she's another one. I'd love to put her name in the notes if you're in the area. And yeah, I mean, my acupuncturist and my cranial sacral therapist, I can definitely put their notes or their names in the notes. But you would have to obviously be, you know, in the Tampa Bay area for that. So yeah, I would say those are some of the biggest people. And, you know, we can put all that in the notes because I know there's a lot to remember.
Awesome. I love it. Now, as we wrap up this episode, you have shared some absolute gems for our audience. Thank you so much. What are your mic drop moments, your takeaways that if they're not going to listen to an hour of us chatting back and forth, they can listen to this very last part and still get something mm-hmm. out of the conversation? What would you say?
Yeah. I'd say some really important takeaways that I learned during the process was just don't give up. I mean, time really is everything. And time also is so hard, right? Like to get through time when you're feeling these types of symptoms. I mean, a minute with these types of symptoms is hard. But just don't give up and give it time. Healing takes time. Know that recovery takes time. Symptom improvement takes time. The second thing that I would really say is get moving. Just get moving. That's why VRT is something, a really good thing to start with, because it kind of forces you to get moving. You know, like I said, I was pretty lucky that I had that intention to kind of continue moving from the get-go. But you know what? Some days just getting out of bed, walking to the bathroom, walking downstairs, walking to the kitchen, and then going back to bed, that's still moving. That's, you know, that's enough. So have compassion as well for yourself in that sense. And then I would say, keep challenging yourself. I think VRT honestly does that as well. You kind of continue challenging yourself. You know, graded exposure, the concept of graded exposure is, kind of that concept that you do challenge yourself and kind of start small and work your way up. So, you know, that might look like walking a couple steps outside your house and then going back inside, and then a couple weeks later, it might look like walking around the block. And then a couple weeks later, you know, you might be walking for 15 minutes and then you may be walking for an hour or walking, you know, where it's really busy versus before you were just walking, you know, near your house in a neighborhood. So kind of continuously raising the bar and exposing yourself is, I think, a huge thing. And then, oh man, this is such a big one. Surrounding yourself with a support group. That is so huge. And I was so lucky to have such a supportive group of people. Like I just have to shout out my husband. I mean, he was phenomenal throughout this process. He obviously couldn't relate. You know, a lot of people can't. Most people don't even really understand what it is. They'll say, oh, I know someone that has vertigo. And you're like, oh no, it's so much more. But you don't necessarily need someone to relate or have had the same experience to still have that empathy from them and to still have that support. So definitely turning to family and friends. And there's a huge community of vestibular patients out there as well. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the Dizzy Cook. Vita is another great place to go to. I'm going to continue shouting them out because I learned so much from them as well. But they have an actual whole like support group page on their website where you can find online support groups. You can find local support groups for your cities. So that's another really good place to start. I think you can find a support group in your healthcare providers as well, kind of build that tribe of providers and professionals that you're working with. I did want to point out the social media groups. I definitely joined them in the beginning, and they have their positives. But if you're early on in the journey and you're in a very vulnerable state, which most people are, I would say maybe avoid those massive groups. Most people that get better and that improve and that heal tend to leave the group, so they're not as active in the groups, at least. And you're going to see a lot of people that, you know, may talk about their journey, and you may find yourself comparing to them and saying, oh my gosh, is that going to be me? And while I feel so for those people, it's probably good to avoid that because there is a lot of negativity in them. But if you can kind of weed through that, they can be great too. I did find a lot of answers in them as well. It's great to not feel alone and to kind of have that community of people. And then people do talk about recovery stories and things that help them on there. I would say maybe avoid those early on in the beginning because there's just so many other resources out there. So that's another big one. I mean, just remembering healing isn't linear. You know, we talked a lot about setbacks, and don't let the setbacks or the regressions break you. They're going to happen. It's inevitable. I still, you know, have times where the symptoms aren't there, and then they may be one day. And I've come to a point where I normally take that as my body's saying something to me. Maybe I'm really stressed out, or, you know, maybe I need to have some self-care, or, you know, whatever it is. So I've kind of taken that more as a warning sign now. But I definitely had times where I would make progress and then I may go back. And just don't let that break your spirit, and don't let that stop you from kind of continuing on that path. And then, like, the biggest thing that I could say is just like, have compassion for yourself, because it's not easy. You know, this is a very dark time for many people. It was for me. And just like, be proud of yourself. You know, getting up in the morning is something to be proud of, and to take the steps, even if they're small steps, towards, you know, a goal. And I think that's something to really be kind to yourself about, and just acknowledge and have compassion for yourself. So that's really it. And also, just don't compare your journey to everyone else's. I mean, it's great to listen to stories and recovery stories and what helped people, but your journey is personal to you. And just don't compare your journey to the next person, because I can guarantee you it's going to look a little different. So yeah, I would say those are my biggest takeaways for listeners. And I just wanted to kind of conclude with saying that, you know, reflecting back on who I was and where I was before the symptoms started, I actually had a lot of imbalance happening in my life, maybe not physically, right? And it's kind of funny, then it became physical. But I can truly tell you that this journey has helped me find more balance in my life than I think I ever have. I can truly thank this vestibular something, whatever you want to call it, 3PD, the symptoms, the sensations. I use different words for them all the time. It's opened so many doors for me. It's created so many new paths. I'm taking so many more risks and chances, and I have so much more compassion and love for myself. And it really helped me find joy and gratitude again. And I had really lost that, I think, before going through this. And so I just want to point that out and say, it's a really dark time and I acknowledge that, but I can promise you that you will find light again in your journey.
You're going to make me cry, Allison.
I know it's a lot, but I just felt the need to tell people that. I really hope that listeners who are in that journey, can find a little hope in this story.
Absolutely. You are such an inspiration. I'm so glad that you came on the show, and I cannot wait for people who are just starting their journey, who are in the middle of their journey, who have been on this journey for years, to listen to this episode and just get that sense of hope. And also, like you said, that feeling of there is joy to be found in life. And sometimes mm-hmm. we just have to look within ourselves to get it. So mm-hmm. thank you so much, Allison, for joining us tonight. And audience, thank you always for being here with us. We look forward to next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
The content of this podcast is based on general knowledge and information available up until the recording of this specific episode. Medical knowledge and practices may evolve over time, and new information may emerge that could change the understanding or treatment of vestibular dysfunction. It is important to consult a qualified healthcare professional for the most up-to-date and personalized advice.
The information provided in this podcast is meant to complement, not replace, the relationship that exists between a patient and their healthcare provider. It is intended to empower patients with knowledge about vestibular dysfunction and its management, but individual cases may vary and treatment approaches should be tailored to each patient's unique circumstances.
By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to the terms of this medical disclaimer. The organizers, presenters, and creators of this podcast are not liable for any actions or decisions taken by individuals based on the information presented herein. Always consult with a qualified healthcare provider for medical advice and treatment.